Welcome to an international postseason edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm here with Charles Gardner, beat reporter who covers the Bucks. Actually, we're not really together. He's in Toronto. I'm back stateside. It's been kind of a busy, different week for you, Charles. What's the order of operations been kind of since the last regular season game heading into the playoffs?
Yes, it really has, Matt. I just came up to Toronto from Boston once the season ended because we thought that the Bucks might be one of the earlier games on the playoff docket, and indeed they are. They're the second game in the first round. Cleveland got the first game, but we had heard that Toronto might be an early game, and indeed it is. So I've been up here. Was at the Raptors practice today at their beautiful practice facility out near Lake Ontario. And then you were back at Bucks practice. So we've been double teaming this, and I imagine we'll continue to do that throughout the series. So it's been working out pretty well. But it has been busy for you and for me. I know you've been running back and forth to practice. The Bucks left there today. What, early afternoon, I take it, Matt?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, how do you feel about having a kind of random surprise week-long visit to Toronto?
I'm here for 6 days. I said that to somebody, and they said, wow, you know, well, I like Toronto. I love it here. It's beautiful. Great, beautiful city, and very diverse, and a very interesting city. And once you get here, it's great. Once you get through all the passport issues, and really I didn't have any issues. It went real quickly for me this time. So let's hope that continues, especially if we're going back and forth. I might have two more visits up here after, you know, if there's a game five and a game seven. So we just have to see how far this goes. But this is one of my favorite stops in the league, no doubt about that. And I've got a base here at the Marriott Eaton Center. I love it. And I'm just going to be bunkered down here for the playoffs. So, you know, I think it'll work well. We'll see how this series goes. Certainly the Raptors are favored. In my prediction for tomorrow, I said Raptors in six. But, hey, I might be wrong. And you never know how these series will go. The Raptors had struggled in the playoffs and kind of broke through last year with getting all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, of course, we know Jason Kidd's Brooklyn team was a team that upset the Raptors in 2014. And, of course, that team was a very experienced Nets team. You had Joe Johnson, Paul Pierce, Deron Williams. So the Bucks, but as you pointed out today with some of your notes, the Bucks are a little bit of a different team than they were 2 years ago as far as playoff experience. Some of the newcomers do have more experience. Of course, not with the Bucks, but with other NBA teams.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their roster, and of the guys who come back from that 2015 playoff team who actually played in that series, you know, you only have three guys. It's John Henson, Chris Middleton, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So, you know, you're not really deep on the experience when it comes to those guys, but they have six other guys who they brought in either by free agency or trade this season, and all of them have playoff experience. You know, everyone from Spencer Hawes, who just recently got here, to Jason Terry, who is basically a playoff, you know, staple. He's there all the time. And so when you look look at the number of games of playoff experience that the Bucks have now, you know, compared to 2 years ago, it's more than double. And so they kind of have that in their back pocket. You know, I don't think they'll be very kind of, you know, wide-eyed and kind of, you know, taken in by the moment when it comes to Saturday's Game 1 in Toronto. Granted, you know, the Raptors do have a very well-known, you know, following and very loud crowd and very involved crowd with people hanging out outside this, you know, the arena watching the game and all that stuff. But I think that the Bucks.
Now they call it Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park, they call it.
As they should.
And they were talking about it today. Yeah, some of the TV reporters were talking about it today over at practice, and they encourage people to come out. Masai Ujiri, their general manager, spoke briefly today before practice, and he was saying, you know, that really encouraging everyone to get out and be loud. And it's a playoff atmosphere up here in Toronto, Matt, because the Maple Leafs also have finally made the NHL playoffs. And they played last night, their first game in Washington. They lost in overtime, but they didn't play badly. I actually watched part of the end of it, and they had a chance. Their goaltender played tremendous, and so there's kind of a nice spring vibe up here. It's playoff time, and the Blue Jays are the only team that isn't really there. I think they were 1-8 entering tonight, so they're playing at home over at the Rogers Center. Cool. So there's a lot of sports going on in Toronto here this weekend.
I had heard that, and I'm not a huge NHL follower, so you know, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone you know who hears this, but I had heard that all of the Canadian NHL teams that played last night, they all lost. So
yeah, I think you might be right. I know Edmonton lost, and Calgary lost. Yeah,
And Toronto. So
and Toronto, but they're still excited here. And that same plaza where all the Raptors fans, they call it Maple Leaf Square for the hockey, and then it's Jurassic Park for the the Raptors. There's a lot of excitement up here.
Yeah, Maple Leaf Square doesn't have the same ring to it as Jurassic Park.
No, it doesn't.
You know, but kind of jumping back into the NBA, which I think we're better in tune
we're
with.
Better prepared for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, Charles, when you look at this series, you know what are the things that jump out to you about the matchup between the Bucks and the Raptors?
Well, I think, you know, you have DeRozan and Lowry. You just have to start there. I wrote about DeMar DeRozan for tomorrow, talked to him a little bit today. And he's a more confident guy than he was a few years ago when he was just starting to play in the postseason. And Coach Casey said today, I asked him about that, and he said, look, you know, he's just more comfortable in his own skin. I think that was his words. And he said, now when he gets double teamed, he doesn't panic. He might have done that when he was younger. Now he's going to pass out of it. They've got 3-point shooters around him. And the Bucks have seen this in the two games in Toronto in the regular season. They got blown out. And I think Lowry and DeRozan, when they played together against the Bucks, they've averaged 42 points a game or something like that. So there was one game where Lowry didn't play because of the injury. So it really starts with them, of course, two all-stars. But they have other good players, Jonas Valanciunas. He spoke to the media here today. He's a big load in there at center, tough for the Bucks to deal with. Thon Maker giving up a lot of pounds when he's going up against Jonas. So there will be some tough matchups. It seems that the Raptors have multiple guys also that can guard Giannis. They can bring DeMar Carroll on him. They've got P.J. Tucker, who they acquired at the trade deadline. This guy's a tough defender. You remember him from Phoenix, and he's just fit right in here. And they think that adding Ibaka and Tucker at the deadline has really – some people are picking them to be in the NBA Finals this year, to actually beat Cleveland. Of course, this would be a second-round matchup now if the Raptors win this series and Cleveland beats Indiana. So there's some pretty high expectations for the Raptors. We'll see if they fulfill that or if the Bucks can find some magic against them. I think you wrote that they were 2-13. Of course, this is a playoff, so this is going to be different than the regular season, and it will be real interesting. I think the Bucks, you know, they have some weapons that the Raptors are going to have to deal with too. When you talk about Brogdon, Middleton, and Giannis.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the 2-13 number, for people who might not have read the story, first of all, you should go back and read the story. But you know, the story I wrote was just saying that over the past 4 years, since Giannis and Middleton have both been with the Bucks have a 2-13 record against the Raptors, which is Milwaukee's worst record against any Eastern Conference team in that time span. You know, and it's actually even by two games worse than any other team. So it, you know, the Raptors have been a tough test for the Bucks over the past 4 years. Just like the one team that the Bucks can't figure out, that they can't, you know, overcome on any like type of consistent basis. And one of those wins came, you know, 6 weeks ago when Toronto came to the Bradley Center, but Kyle Lowry wasn't playing. And so, you know, without him, Toronto's not the same team at all. I mean, he's their engine that kind of runs things, especially being the point guard who, you know, the offense runs through him. You know, taking him or DeRozan off the team really changes the complexion of what the Raptors can do and what they're all about. So, you know, and mentioning those two guys, I mean, I talked to a bunch of Bucks players about, you know, what it takes to defend, you know, Lowry, who is liable to shoot basically from anywhere on the court, and then DeRozan, who's a jump shooting assassin, you know, in terms of, you know, 2-point shots, you know, and getting to the rim and settling in the mid range and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Giannis basically just said, we gotta just throw bodies at him all the time, and, you know, can't give him anything easy. And if we're going to foul him, we don't want to foul him. We don't want to put him on the line and give them free points. But if we're going to foul him, we got to foul him hard. You know, this is the playoffs.
That was an interesting comment by Giannis. And I'm sure it will be physical. And normally they let a little more go in the playoffs. So we'll see how that goes. But the incredible thing really about DeRozan is how frequently he does get to the line. Fifth in the league in free throw attempts, I think. Almost 700 attempts during the regular season. So he knows, and he told me today, I was asking him about the threes, and he said, hey, you know, why should I take three threes that might be a little out of his range? He said, when I could get to my spot and get six trips to the foul line. So that's the way he looks at it, which is a different way of looking at things in this day and age in the NBA. But it's what works for him. And as you said, Matt, he's a good complement then to Lowry, who I remember one game here this year earlier, he launched from, it seemed like, half court and hit the shot. So, you know, his range is about wherever. And, you know, they have other three-point shooters as well. So, yeah, it will be real interesting. I think what Dwayne Casey was saying today that was interesting to me was that he said how he just feels they're so much tougher defensively, more physical. And he attributed that in large part to getting Ibaka and P.J. Tucker. He said they're always talking about defense. And maybe that wasn't the case before. He said last year they had Bismack Biyombo, as you remember, the big kind of shot blocker in the middle. But these are, of course, Ibaka's a great shot blocker, led the league in block shots 4 seasons, I think. But it's a different look for them, you know. It's a different look for them with having a power forward and now Tucker, a guard who can defend at such a high rate.
You know, and you know, you mentioned Tucker and Ibaka and all those kind of, you know, role players, or, you know, maybe second tier to Rosen and Lowry type players. I think that you included this from the notes that you got from Toronto about how, you know, Dwayne Casey was talking about the role players and how important of a position they have in this series. And actually, those comments were kind of mirrored by Jason Kidd, you know, saying that, listen, you know, stars are going to be stars. That's what happens in the playoffs. Stars do their thing, you know, but it's the other guys. Like, someone else is going to need to step up. The Bucks just can't get, you know, production from Giannis and Middleton. They're going to need, you know, Greg Monroe off the bench to do some things, or Jason Terry or Michael Beasley or Mirza Teletovic or any of those guys who come off the bench to give them a spark. Even John Henson, you know, being able to, you know, kind of go against, you know, guys like Ibaka or Valanciunas in the paint and block shots and kind of steady their defense and provide a, you know, some rim protection. Like, those types of little things, you know, can come up huge in the postseason, because you only have a 7-game sample size, you know, for any given series at best. So
yeah,
you know,
no doubt.
You need those guys to show up.
Remember John Henson in Chicago 2 years ago? He played out of his mind and helped the Bucks extend that series to the 6th game, and that was, you know, one of the best stretches that he's had probably in his Bucks career. So that's an example of what you're talking about. Who will come up? And that's what Coach Casey was saying today. Doug Smith from the Toronto Star asked him, who do you see? He says, we know about Giannis. Who do you see as maybe an X factor, an X-Men, I called it, but an X factor? And he said Monroe first, which is interesting. And then he said, you know, hey, Jason Terry, he mentioned Snell, you know, he mentioned Beasley. He said, these are other guys that, you know, we can't forget about. He said, you know, we gotta really be aware that these said Snell can go off for a big game. Like, and we saw him do that in Orlando, in Charlotte, you know, late in the season. So,
well, twice against Charlotte late in the season.
Right. Twice. The road and the home game. You're right. So they're very aware of that. And, you know, it will be interesting to see. But that he was saying, hey, look, we can't just only think about Giannis, or that will be that'll be a problem for us. He said, because he is a good passer. He's not going to just look for his shot or every time. And of course, Casey said they're going to put multiple guys on Giannis, and they have the guys to do it. This may be why it's one of the tough matchups for the Bucks in the East, because they could put Tucker, they could put DeMar Carroll, who said he's been studying film of Giannis. They could put Ibaka. That's three good defenders, and with length. Probably Tucker is the smallest of those, but he's a rugged defender, so he'll probably still take a few turns on Giannis, and then you've got the other guys with the length and ability to block shots, so it just won't be, you know, clear sailing for Giannis in this series. They've got guys that at least physically can match up with him. And Carroll was saying, hey, look, he's a great player, and we're not going to stop him all the time, but they're going to try to make it as tough as they can. So it's as you said, Matt, some of the other players will have to come up, and Chris struggled a little bit at the end of the season, we know, with his shot. So that'll be critical that they get some scoring from other sources.
You know, and among those other sources are, you know, a pair of rookies who have been starting for the Bucks in Malcolm Brogdon and Thon Maker. You know, obviously we talked about the experience that the Bucks have at a lot of different positions, but those guys, it's likely that they'll continue starting as we go into game one. How do you think they handle being on this stage, especially, you know, with Thon being back where he used to play basketball, you know, at prep school in Canada?
Yeah. Yes, he did. It will be interesting to see. I think it's a tall order for Thon, especially with Valanciunas, because he's so physical. And but we shall see. We know Thon has really improved as the season went along. And if he's struggling, we know that Coach Kidd will get Monroe in there. It's also, I think, interesting to see what will happen with the third center. Does he go to Henson or Hawes? Some of the Toronto writers were talking today about Hawes because he had a pretty good game against the Raptors in that game the Bucks won in March. And I said he's been scoring at a pretty good level here lately, so we'll see if he gets a chance. I think the rookies, they've been a big factor in the Bucks' success, and we know Brogdon has been terrific. I think one of the big keys in the series is Brogdon, because Matt, I think he needs to be good. You know, you've got this great backcourt for the Raptors. I mean, he has to put some pressure on him with his offense. He has to make them a little worried, commit some fouls, you know. And he looked good in the game in Boston. We know he'd been out with that back injury. So for five games, I think it's very critical. You know, if they were to lose him for some time in the series, that would really be tough. And of course, this is why they took their time, tried to make sure he was healthy and ready to go. I talked to him in Boston the other day, and you talked to him too, I think, since then at practice. But he told me he was ready to go. He feels fine. He thought that, I think he got 23 minutes in the finale against the Celtics. And he looked good in the game as far as his movement. He had that one dunk off an offensive rebound. He rebounded his own three-point miss and dunked it, and drawing a few oohs and ahs from the TD Garden crowd. So the Bucks really, I think, will need him to be good in this series to have a chance.
Yeah, and you're right. I did talk to Brogdon on Thursday, and he reiterated that his back is fine. He's 100%. It's not an issue. You know, he's ready to go. But then I asked him about, you know, going up against Lowry, you know, a guy who's a perennial All-Star who Brogdon hasn't seen in a game since January. And in the early part of the season, you know, Malcolm wasn't being used in the same way as he is now, on the same, you know, consistent basis. So those minutes that he had might not have always been against Lowry. And I kind of just asked him, hey, like, how do you approach, you know, a seasoned All-Star player who it's going to be your job to take care of him? I mean, Brogdon's going to play big minutes, and he's going to play him, you know, against Lowry, and, you know, have to check him on the defensive end and, you know, be ready for whatever comes. And he just said, hey, I'm excited. You know, he said, you know, this is a quote. He goes, we know he's one of the best point guards in our league, but you know I'm not afraid of any challenge. You know, in my mind, I go at him like I go at anybody else. You know, so that was kind of what he said. And, you know, that's one of the nice things for the Bucks in having Brogdon is that, you know, he's an older rookie. He spent all that time in college. He's been in big collegiate games, which I'm not saying they're the same as the NBA playoffs, but, you know, he's been in you know, big situations in, you know, NBA arenas, you know, with all the nation watching, you know, and all that type of stuff. I think he's ready and kind of experienced for that moment, even though he hasn't been in an NBA moment like that, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. Remember, he's the guy who asked Coach Kidd if he could defend Kawhi Leonard. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to back down from anyone. And that's been part of the success, secret to the Bucks' success this season, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and kind of speaking of Brogdon, I guess this is a good time to kind of transition away from this playoff series. We'll have at least one more podcast during this series just to, you know, kind of keep up with what's going on. But let's switch over to your award votes, Charles, because you are a voter for the NBA season awards. And so I wanted to kind of go through. You submitted your ballot today on Friday as they were due. And so I wanted to go through each award and find out who you picked and kind of get your thinking as to why. So let's start with, you know, the one that everybody's been talking about for weeks and months, the NBA MVP. You know, you got five guys, five spots that you can rank them. You know, where'd you go from top to bottom?
Well, this one, you know, was very difficult for a lot of people, and certainly it was for me. Westbrook and Harden having such great seasons, and I think most people are going to rank them, most of the voters will rank them 1-2 in some fashion. I voted for Westbrook for MVP. I probably had to be, you know, I had to get there. I wasn't there maybe a couple months ago because Harden had done such a great job for getting Houston. You know, I mean, he's had a phenomenal season. I think you could pick either one, and it wouldn't be a wrong choice. But Westbrook just kept going, you know, with this run that he's been on, not just the triple-doubles, but helping his team win. Really, when you look, I think we've talked about this before, if you look at the Thunder without him, it would be rough to see where they might be. They wouldn't be in the playoffs. I mean, that's for sure. So I just think his remarkable season should be rewarded. And so I voted Westbrook 1, Harden 2. I voted Kawhi Leonard 3, LeBron James 4. And partly why I put James 4th is he sat out a bunch of the games here. And I'm not real fond of all that. And so, of course, he's tremendous. We all know he's LeBron James.
Yeah, he's LeBron. He's probably actually the best player in the league. But, you know, it's a season-by-season award. You know,
right. And in this ranking, I felt justified in having him fourth. And of course, you have to have a center on the team. So this is where it gets interesting.
That's for your first team All-NBA, right?
Or first team All-NBA. Right, right. And, we're talking about MVP. That's MVP. Right. I'm looking at my list here, Matt, because I made my list with my little cheat sheet from talking to you here.
Spoiler alert, Charles is going to have Westbrook, Harden, Kawhi, and LeBron on his first team All-NBA. Spoiler.
Right. And then here's the fifth spot for both of those since I was looking at the wrong list. I voted Giannis fifth for MVP. And I think I'm not the only one to do it. He just had a phenomenal season. And as we wrote about last week, in any other season, he might have had more consideration for an MVP award. But I voted him fifth. And on the All-NBA team where you needed a center, I picked Rudy Gobert fifth, which is a little bit of an upset. I think there are some other voters doing that because you need a center on that All-NBA team. But for the MVP, I went with Giannis in the fifth spot. Of course, you could have had a lot of different players in that spot. And certainly the All-NBA teams, we'll get to that, were very difficult to pick.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this year, I mean, every year it's got to be, you know, hard. You're only picking a certain number of guys, and there are many deserving candidates. But this year especially, when you look at the MVP, there's just so many, guys. You know, those top four that you had, I think most people would agree that you could pick any of those guys. Depending on the way that you look at things, you could say, oh, well, Kawhi was the best two-way player among all of them. He deserves it. You know, or Westbrook, all the reasons that you kind of gave and the way he elevated the Thunder and kind of just controlled everything. Harden, you can go the same way. You say, hey, his supporting cast isn't all that incredible. He doesn't have a bunch of all-stars around him, and he's running the show and he's, making those assists and he's totally changed the way he played from last year and he's, not as much of a defensive liability anymore. He's still not great on defense, but he's still not as big of a liability, and his stats have improved there. And then LeBron James, some people might just vote and say he's the best player, period. It doesn't matter. So, all those guys, Steph Curry, his numbers have not dropped, dramatically, considering that Kevin Durant went to the Warriors, and, they still have all those kind of different pieces. But Steph Curry's put together a really solid season that, obviously, when you compare it to his two MVP years, it's a little bit different, but he still put great numbers up there.
Yeah, the guards were really hard to pick on the All-NBA teams because there are just so many guards that came up and played well, and it was tough, no doubt about that. Yeah, and as you say, Curry, some of the guys who have been MVPs before, but as you said, you got to look at this season and who had the top contributions this season. And I think it was, to me, Westbrook ascended past everyone here and maybe in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I feel like if I had a vote, and I haven't thought about this a ton since I don't have a vote, which is nice.
Right.
I might have gone Harden, but I might have also just flipped a coin because those guys are so close in what they've done and how they've played. Harden didn't have the triple doubles, but he has the most double doubles, and that doesn't get as much coverage nationally as the triple double chase did. But he's done incredible things and totally just revamped what the Rockets are all about. And some people kind of detract from him saying, oh well, Mike D'Antoni's system does that, but he was doing it. He was out there making things happen. That system, the system doesn't work with everyone, as we saw when D'Antoni coached the Knicks, and that's just kind of how it is.
He had a tremendous choice, and he may win it. It's hard to say. It's going to be very close, I think, between those two guys. I mean, it's just a very tough choice. I was leaning toward Harden for most of the season, and maybe I should have stayed there, but it was just hard and Westbrook just kept doing phenomenal things, more phenomenal almost every night, and hit that buzzer beater recently, and what, 50-point game, and you just think, well, this is something that's not going to happen every year. You know, Oscar Robertson went to see him and you know, praised him, of course, and I just think the energy, the pace he plays with every night. He never sat out until he played just a few minutes in the last game of the season, I believe, but he played every game. That basically counts for something, also.
As did Harden. I'm interested to see if, you know, since the NBA is not announcing these award winners until the middle of June.
That's going to be different, isn't it? So yeah, we're not going to know. You know, that's something we should point out, Matt, that in the past, and our listeners probably know this, that these were released during the playoffs kind of one by one at different times, and then they were released. Now it's all going to be, the way I understand it, at an award show near the draft time in late June. So I don't know how they're going to keep it all a secret for that long.
I don't think they will. That's the point I was going to make, because I'm interested to see, because obviously you're giving your picks here on the podcast, and people can hear them, and someone can jot them down, and other people have written their picks or tweeted their picks or spoken about their picks on podcasts, radio, whatever. So I'm sure some enterprising individual out there will compile a list and give us an idea of where we stand. So, you know, and this year, regardless of if someone collects them, the NBA actually is collecting them, so that when the winners are announced, you'll see all of the picks from all of the national writers and broadcasters and all that stuff. So you'll get to see that. So, you know, with all that, I'm excited for, you know, the Thunder Rockets first round series, where the two potential MVPs will go against each other, and we'll get to kind of enjoy that. You know, but let's move on to the next award, which will be Rookie of the Year. I'm guessing I know where you're going with this, but give us your top three.
Yeah, I voted. I did vote for Malcolm Brogdon as the Rookie of the Year. Second round pick, sensational story. Just nobody would have figured the 36th pick would have such an impact. I don't think we even would have figured it early in the season when he knew he was playing. We knew he was going to play a lot just based on the Bucks roster. But to take the starting role, to have a triple-double, to you know, shoot the three so well, to defend so well against elite players in the league. I think he was number one. Dario Saric, tremendous season also. I had number two. I voted Embiid three, and I debated not voting for Embiid at all, because I'm very adamant that he should not be the winner of playing just 31 games. And a lot of people are supporting him, and he still could win this award playing only 31 games. I think that would be a bad precedent to set. But he was so outstanding that you feel he should get some support. I didn't think I could leave him off my ballot all the way, and that would be a right thing to do. So it'll be interesting to see, because he only played 31 games, where he lands and how the voters pick it. I think many of the writers feel that's not enough. We know what Stan Van Gundy feels.
Oh, yes, we do.
Don't we, Matt? Because he spoke about it before a game in Milwaukee and said, come on, 31 is not enough to be a Rookie of the Year. And I always bring up that Jabari played 25 games his rookie season, and nobody ever even hinted that he should be the Rookie of the Year. Of course, he didn't play probably at the level that Embiid was sensational when he was in there. We remember that game in Milwaukee that he just destroyed the Bucks, and he did that to others as well. So, but, you know, I think half the season, I don't even know if that was enough. 50 games, I think I'd like to see 50 games. That would be my measuring stick.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think that's a reasonable number, and, you know, get through, you know, basically two-thirds of the season or something close to that. And at least, Yeah, or in a certain number of games where, you know, you could allow for an injury here or there, or, you know, some early season DNPs, just as they kind of get used to the NBA. But yeah, 31 seems a little bit low. I'm actually a little surprised that you put him on your ballot, just, you know, at all. Not that it's wrong, but just from knowing you.
Yeah, no, I debated it, but I thought, hey, that's a little harsh to leave him off. Absolutely, when he has all that talent. It's a tough, yeah, I wanted to be principled, but I guess I wanted to be reasonable. So
there weren't many other rookies who really stood out.
No, well, and this was the thing about, if you look at that rookie first team, second team, it wasn't the way we see it some years when they're just glittering talent all over the place. The rookie class was not a great one in quantity or in quality, you know, as far as numbers. But I think Buddy Hield, for example, actually I had him as my last player on the first team. I never thought I would have him on the first all-rookie team. But he played very well when he went to Sacramento after the trade. And there just aren't a lot of guys. I had Marquise Chris and Hield as the other guys. You vote for five. And, you know, for that first team, they're just, it was not a deep rookie class. And this next class may be quite different. We know there were other classes that were different. But I think Malcolm showed that, you know, you can be a second round pick and really, really make an impact. So that's the great story about the rookie class in my mind.
For sure. I can't debate that. So let's move on to Coach of the Year, which another one you can go in a million different directions. I'm interested to see where you went with it.
Yeah, well, here's my upset pick. And I'm sure my number one person is, well, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to win and maybe not get a lot of first place votes. But this one I went with my heart, Matt. I picked Scottie Brooks. And I actually had a discussion, was kind of talking with Coach Kidd the other day. We were talking about some of the Coach of the Year people and just kind of, before shoot around, you know, just off the cuff before you get into the questions for the interviews. And he was touting Eric Spoelstra, and I do too. I mean, I came so close to voting for Eric, and maybe Eric deserves it as number one. Just incredible job he did with the Heat from 11-30 to reverse the record, 30-11 over the second half. That's just amazing, without really any stars. And I wanted to vote him number one, but here's the reason I voted for Scottie Brooks. I just think Washington has been a franchise that has never, they always had talent, but they never put it together under the coaches they had in the past. And here came Scott Brooks, and all of a sudden Beal and Wall are getting along. They had a bad start. What were they, 3-9 or something like that? They turned it all around. They got the fourth spot. They got home court. He put this talent together, and it worked together. And there must be something he did, you know, to get them to have home court advantage in the playoffs. And we'll see how they do in the playoffs. But I just thought he sat out last year. He didn't coach. And then came back after, you know, he had been fired by Oklahoma City. And I think there was a lot of questions. Well, how would he do in Washington with, especially with that backcourt duo, star duo? And they really became a good team. Now, I think he'll get some support. He probably won't get too many first place votes. We'll see if I'm the only one. But I went with him, then Spo, and then Mike D'Antoni. And, you know, but I think Scottie Brooks, tremendous job, and a little bit under the radar, maybe.
Yeah, and the Wizards ostensibly had the same team as last year, and that's kind of what makes it even more impressive.
Well, that's why it's the same guys who their former coach couldn't get to do anything. Excuse me. But you know, they never put it together. And all of a sudden, you had a guy like Otto Porter, who, spoiler alert, is in my most improved top three. So somebody got Otto Porter, Bradley Beal, all these guys to really play as a team and to play better than I think a lot of people thought they would. Spo, as I say, I wish I could maybe have shared it because incredible job that Eric did. And had they made the playoffs, I mean, they tied with the Bulls in record and got beat on a tiebreaker. Had they made the playoffs, he probably would have. He missed it by that much. and that probably isn't fair. He should get it whether they made the playoffs or not. But those two guys were my favorites by far.
All right.
And, of course, Mike D'Antoni did a great job in Houston. But I always try to go with the coach of the year. Of course you're going to have the guys who do it all the time, Greg Popovich, and maybe they get penalized. But I always like to look for a team that maybe you didn't expect to do as well, and that coach brings them together.
Yeah, that's a fair way to do it. And so, with that behind us, let's go to Defensive Player of the Year. That another one that is totally up in the air, but I have a guess where you might have gone with this one.
I went with Draymond Green. Just an incredible year he had. Now, I've gone with him before, and he's lost to Leonard. And, of course, Leonard, you could vote almost every year in this as well. But I think Draymond was just, terrific guarding multiple positions. He just makes such a difference for that Warriors team. The Warriors are the best team in the league. There's Green's a big reason for that. I voted for him. I voted for him in the past, I think he will win it this year, Matt. He's going to win. I'm pretty sure. And I voted Rudy Gobert second and Leonard third.
Yeah, I was thinking you might go with Gobert first. Like you mentioned him as your first team all NBA, and I know you have to have a center, so he obviously fits the bill there. But he's been incredible
too.
He's
going to get some support. Yeah,
definitely the best rim protector in the league. Obviously, he doesn't do the same things that Draymond does, but he just locks down the paint to the level that really no one else does in the league. It's just incredibly impressive what he does and how he anchors that defense and just does it on such a consistent basis.
Yeah, he's definitely got to be in the top three there. So those three guys seem to be
near unanimous. So, then that's a tight race, but I think those three guys head and shoulders above everybody else. Let's move on to Sixth Man of the Year, one that, the Bucks own Greg Monroe might get some votes for, or at least consideration for.
I think he might. I voted Eric Gordon of the Rockets, who, he faded a little bit, I think, after an incredible start. But he's still, again, he's a guy that came off the bench, fit in that D'Antoni offense to a T, knocking down threes, and he just fit them. They really have two candidates, Eric Gordon and Lou Williams, who they got in a trade. But I went with Gordon, I went with Iguodala second, and I voted Greg Monroe third. I think Greg, 81 games off the bench. I mean, he played almost every game. He was consistent. He did just what, as I wrote about for the story today, he did what Coach Kidd wanted him to do to keep that bench unit being productive. And, here's a guy who had started his whole career, and he accepted this. And last year, of course, we know he came off the bench in some stretches. But this year, that was his role. He's coming off the bench, 81 games, and never started a game. And, of course, was a big factor in the Bucks' success. So, and you often think of guards with this, but I think it's kind of fun to have a big man that's in the six-man consideration.
Yeah, when it comes to Greg Monroe, the one game he missed was like that kind of bizarre game in the middle of the year where he just didn't play and there's really no explanation for it. And I don't know if we'll ever know what really happened there. I'm blanking.
Yeah,
which game was it?
That was one game, right?
It was the Miami game in November that he just just didn't play, and he was there, and that was during a stretch where the previous day he'd only played 7 minutes at Atlanta, and the next game he only played 2 minutes against the Warriors, and he played 8 minutes against Orlando in the next game. It was just a weird, funky little stretch that, you know,
it was a little stretch
that boggles the mind.
But for the most part, that probably brought his minutes per game down, didn't it? Because, well, we know it did. Because I think I looked up and he averaged, I think, 23 minutes per game, something like that.
Yeah, 22 and a half. We can round up.
Right. So, you know, he's played more than that most of his career, but he's still making a big contribution. He was getting steals. He still has that low post scoring. So I thought he should be credited somewhere in that six-man award. And I think some other people recognize that as well.
Yeah, and I think that just from watching him operate all year, you could tell there was a different level to his play, especially on the defensive end. I mean, he was locked in. He wasn't, you know, great all the time, but he would definitely hustle,
right.
dove for loose balls, like very attacking mentality, and you know.
And
just,
we didn't see that.
Just very different.
No, we didn't see that the first year that he was with the Bucks. So he really stepped that up. Tried to take more charges, knowing he's not a shot blocker. But where he's really effective, I think we wrote. During the season about his steals, and he was out there trapping hard and creating some havoc. And he told me for that story the other day, he said, hey, that's a big part of their defense, and he takes that very seriously.
Yeah, so and his steals per game might not be up, but his steal percentage was the highest of his career. You know, so
yeah.
It's obviously, you know, you look at the stats, just the raw numbers, you're like, ah, well, basically did what he always does, but when you look at the number of minutes he played compared to the rest of his career, this was easily his best season in terms of steals that he's had.
Yeah, no, I think he did a good job there. And, you know, we kind of go with the offense. Certainly all three of those players are good offensively, and we know Iguodala great defensively. So that's what I went for the sixth man.
So the last individual award, I believe, is most improved. So we know Otto
most
Porter's
improved.
On that list. And we also, yeah. I think we all know that Giannis is number one on that list.
He is. Yeah. He's going to win the award. Yeah. I mean, I looked at one survey today on ESPN. He's on almost every one of the ESPN writers' ballots. I mean, I'd be shocked if he doesn't win the award. And, there's not much more to say. He's the most improved. He went from, a solid emerging player to an all-star starter, in the space of, 6 months or whatever it was. He's continually worked at his game. He's, become a player that teams really have to account for. And, dunks, where we say the stats, top 20 in five categories. No NBA player's ever done it. 1.9, I think, was it 1.9 steals and 1.6 blocks? Both are really, I was reading something about that. I mean, those are big numbers for steals and blocks to average. And, I want to make sure I have.
Yeah, 1.6 steals and 1.9 blocks per game.
1.9. The blocks are the 1.9, right?
Yes.
1.9 blocks, 1.6 steals, and those are big numbers, and yeah, just tremendous. I voted Jokic second, and it was a real tough choice for me. I couldn't decide between Bradley Beal and Otto Porter for the third spot, and you could name either one. Both of them were tremendous. I think Otto Porter had several sensational games against the Bucks, and that probably swayed me because he just wasn't a factor, his first few years in the league, and he became this incredible three-point shooter, big part of the Washington offense just improved so much that he's going to get some support on a lot of ballots as well. People knew, you know, he might be a little under the radar, but he came maybe the farthest of anyone, is why I voted him third. He was just a guy you weren't thinking about, and all of a sudden, I remember one of the first two games against the Wizards this year that the Bucks played. It was like, what's he doing? You know, where'd he get this? He hadn't shown that in his young career until this year. So he took some big steps.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so that kind of wraps up the individual awards. And you already teased your All-NBA first team. So on your first team, you have Westbrook, Harden, LeBron, Kawhi, and Rudy Gobert. Let's jump down to the second team and the third team and share with us who you have on
those. This is where it was tough. This was the toughest, Matt. This was the toughest. For a second team, this is how I came. And this changed several times this morning because I was going back and forth before turning my ballot in. And who knows, you know, what's right and what's wrong. But for the second team, we had your Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis, and Jimmy Butler at the forwards, and I went with Butler there. I thought he had a great season for the Bulls and kind of a dysfunctional season for the Bulls. He kept them afloat, got them into the playoffs in the end, and so he's on the second team. Anthony Davis, who probably be most voters' first team center, although I think there'll be a little split there, but. And what makes you feel a little good about this is before they got Cousins, he really was playing center. Toward the end of the season, he was more the power forward. And then at guards, here's the tough part, Matt. I went with Curry and Isaiah Thomas. I really wanted to put John Wall on the second team. I thought he had a great year. But in the end, I dropped him down to the third team, also with the player the Bucks will see tomorrow, DeMar DeRozan, on the third team at guard, put him in there. I guess they listed him as a forward, even though he's really kind of a guard. So I had DeRozan, Wall. Let's see here. No, I don't think this is right, Matt. I put one thing. I put Kevin Durant. It was really tough between Green and Kevin Durant. But I did put Durant on the third team. And, DeRozan was listed at guard. I've got that wrong. DeRozan and Wall, my guards on the third team with Durant, Paul George, and Whiteside. And the reason I chose Whiteside is there must be some reason Miami won all those games, right? I mean, so you could go Marc Gasol, third team center. There were other center choices. But in the end, I thought, hey, there's a reason Miami played better. So Durant and Paul George, Whiteside, DeRozan, and Wall for the third team. And, of course, a big debate about whether George should be on the team. And you've seen some of this written about how this could affect his contract status. So it was a tough choice there. There were other, Draymond Green could have been in there. There were other players. Gordon Hayward certainly could be deserving, but George finished just sensational finish to lift the Pacers. If he hadn't played the way he had the last 2 weeks, he wouldn't have been on that.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically the reason why the Pacers made the playoffs. And, you know, I think he's a reasonable, player to put on the third team. I don't think he's any higher than the third team, but you're right. You know, it'll be really interesting because this is the first year where the media vote for, you know, all NBA teams will decide if players can get that like supermax deal, you know, for staying with their original team. And, you know, this is a huge moment for the Pacers because, you know, if he gets onto an all NBA team, they can pay him a ton more money, which would mean that he would be very likely to stay. It's hard to leave $70 million on the table, you know, and go somewhere else. But if he doesn't get onto one of those teams, then he can get the same amount from them as he can get from other places, and he might walk. So,
Which shows a real flaw in the process here. So we're going to see if that will something may change in the next agreement.
Sure.
But a lot of the writers who did vote said, you know, they felt a big responsibility, and you do when you know you're affecting something like that. You're not affecting a bonus or somebody's bonus or somebody's for games played or something like that. You're really affecting something huge potentially. So we'll see. But I thought he did deserve it. I thought, you know, maybe the one Green or Durant with Draymond being Defensive Player of the Year, maybe I really should have had him on the third team too. That was a tough one. Probably I should have. And Durant might be higher normally, but he was injured. And again, injuries kind of play into this a little bit. And that might be why Durant dropped down to the third team. He still had a great year for the Warriors, but he missed, 20-plus games there. He missed some significant time, and that does have to maybe play a factor in your voting.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair way to approach it. And so, you know, let's go from the All-NBA teams to the All-Defensive teams. Who'd you have on those? I'm guessing Rudy Gobert.
Yes, and I don't know if I wrote this down. I have my little cheat sheet here. I'm trying to think. Definitely All-Defensive. I had Gobert, those guys that we had for Defensive Player of the Year. I'm trying to remember who else I have. Oh, one of the interesting things on the defensive team, Matt, is I have Patrick Beverley at one of the guard spots. And Andre Roberson, as we know, the guy who has no offense but is a very good defensive player for the Thunder, was listed as a forward. He's really a guard, I think. And I think some other voters said, too, hey, you know, we might have voted for him at guard. I voted for – it was funny. I was going down the ballot thinking, where's Roberson? His name never came up for the first team because he was listed as a forward. So he wound up being a forward on my second team. I still put him in there. And I put the Boston Stranglers – Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart. Now I'm just joking, guys. But I put those two guys on the second team. They are tough defenders, right? And there's a reason Boston did get the number one seed. Crowder also could have been a consideration there. But I put Bradley and Marcus Smart as my second team guards on the all defensive. Yeah, I didn't write down the full team here. I'm forgetting a couple here, but Patrick Beverley, I put on the first team as well, and I don't have that right in front of me. But it was a little tougher, again there because of some of the way they had players listed, I didn't vote for Tony Allen this year. I'm sure he'll get his share of votes. You could always vote for him. But I didn't vote for him.
Yeah, and so outside of the defensive team, I think the last team was the all-rookie team. So we kind of mentioned those earlier, and you named off your five guys who you had and the rest of the guys kind of just filled in. You had to pick some guys. You know, so we'll kind of skip over that. So I think that brings us to the end of today's podcast. Charles, what do you think?
I think so. It's time for the playoffs to start tomorrow. Enough of the preliminaries. Time to go.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So for everybody who listened all the way to the end, thank you for following along. You know, as always, you can read all of our latest content at jsonline.com. You know, include it along with the stuff that we wrote, you know, that we mentioned during the podcast. There's also a great story by Lori Nickel about Jason Terry and kind of what he's done to prolong his career and to be a regular in the postseason and all the things he's experienced during his career. So definitely give that a look. And as I mentioned earlier, we'll have another podcast at some point during this series, so keep an eye out for that. You can find it at JS Online. You can also find it on iTunes or Stitcher or Audioboom. You can also subscribe on any of those platforms to make sure that you don't miss the podcast when it comes out. So definitely make sure to subscribe and keep an eye out for that next podcast. We'll talk to you later in the series.